Okay. Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019, 2 o'clock, 2 p.m., Legal Counsel Update in the BCC Conference Room. Chair Lily Morgan was unable to make this meeting, so just Commissioner DeYoung, Commissioner Fowler are here. First item is a community dispute resolution program presented by Deltra Ferguson, Executive Director of Resolve Center for Dispute Resolution and Restorative Justice. Okay. Can fit all that on a business card?
I know, it's crazy.
It is.
Resolve, for sure. Can we join you?
That's great.
Please.
Thank you. This is my Director of Mediation, Brian Bronke. And okay. We're just here to offer you guys some information. This is our biannual ritual, and I know you have a lot of business to do, so I want to be really courteous and aware of that. Okay. I also know that you have gone through the what is essentially opting out process to allow us then to go forward with an RFA process to once again be the service provider for this county, and thank you for that. I appreciate it. We did want to offer you a little information about what we do for okay. Josephine County for the citizens. So I want to make sure this is information for you, and then we'll briefly present and then give you a chance to ask questions, and that's it. And then we'll carry on. So Brian has got a little information to show you about the work that we're doing in terms of mediation processes, both through the circuit court and also for individuals who contact us and need services. And so here's a report. Brian, do you want to highlight a few items out of the report?
As we had mentioned, it's been 2 years, and one of the things we wanted to do was highlight a little bit of the services that we've been doing, and that's what this report consists of. The first page is mostly the service information, and the remainder of the pages are after every session. Clients and parties are offered an evaluation, and that's a accumulation of that data from the last, almost 2 years through the end of...
If I could stop you. Yeah. Commissioner Fowler is brand new here, and it was 2 years ago when we first came on board, so kind of start with a 101 maybe, or
okay.
an 01.
Sure.
What kind of cases do you resolve? Where do they come from? Where do they originate? How is the county involved, and so on and so forth? Would that be helpful?
I think that sounds right.
And so backing up is Oregon has had a dispute resolution process statewide for about the last 20 years.
Disputes between?
Dispute resolution, community dispute resolution services, which involve mediation, conflict coaching. Now we're doing a lot of work in restorative justice.
But what we are resolving disputes between who?
Between citizens,
the county.
Sometimes there'll be landlord-tenant problems or disputes that need a little help. Okay. Sometimes there are family kind of disputes that need help. Really, anywhere there are human beings, we can find conflict in it. So,
it
or not, that is the situation. And so, what we do is that we're there to provide a couple of different ways of handling conflict. One of them is mediation and mediation services, and that's what Brian's talking about.
Okay, all right, thank you. That help?
Yep.
Yeah, and the funding background is that with that, there was a commission in the state that got dissolved in the late 90s. With the first big recession, the program then shifted as a Hail Mary to the University of Oregon, got all the community dispute resolution centers, and there's 16 of them around the state. Mm-hmm. At that point, there were a few more, including there was one here in Josephine County called Common Ground. That piece was responsible for all the community dispute resolution pieces, and just kind of helps you have a little bit of background on those. That's their biennial report from a couple years ago, the last biennium, which talks about the different services. We utilize volunteers. It's one of the funding criterias. The other funding, the small amount of general funding we receive, is through the university as a grant. And each county, such as yourselves, have that opportunity to opt in. which means you guys are going to do the whole RFA process individually, and it'll come through you and that, or to opt out and have it done through the university.
Yeah.
And it just saves a bit of administrative time in reviewing it. The funds all travel through the university side of it. And that's kind of the model. And it's been a flat model for many years. Originally, it started out as a surcharge out of court filings. Since the state has flattened that, so you pay the same amount for a case in Josephine County as you do in Multnomah County, and that okay. It changed that, all those sub fees went away. And so with that, it's now funded that way. And we also have to match dollar for dollar that we get in. And so it is a summary of the services. And it was about 8 years ago that the group here, Common Ground, was struggling and came and approached us about taking over those services. And we actually have three of those members who are still active and involved with us is Resolve in that. Mm-hmm. And so that's...
So the things I want to highlight for you is that this process is very satisfactory to people who engage in it. And it's complementary to our circuit courts and our judicial system in that it offers another way for people to address a conflict that they're trying to get through, the disputes they're trying to get through. We will renew that contract and that relationship with the circuit court this year and continue that service here in Josephine County. In addition to the mediation and that we provide, and I don't know, do you want to talk? Yeah, let's keep going with these guys. I also want you to know about what we're doing in terms of our other services. We've juvenile justice. We have a relationship with juvenile justice here too. Through something we call, the other practice we call, which is restorative justice. We've been working with Jim Goodwin for a number of years, and actually provided them with what was called a theft impact curriculum, and they use it with the youth that are there in detention and that are in contact with juvenile. And not that are in detention, but actually as a diversion program. So
okay.
So they're still utilizing that. This year in January, or I guess it was last January, we provided an introductory restorative justice training to the staff there. So we're helping in that regard. We've also been working with the Oregon Youth Authority since 2015-16. They're doing a tremendous amount of work, really refashioning what they're doing there. I don't know what you know about what's going on at OYA or at the Rogue Valley Youth Correctional Institution. We've trained all the staff there in restorative justice. We're helping them with a whole systems implementation of restorative justice there to really change the culture and the systems and the policies that they're using as they do their work. There's an RJ curriculum that's been created for new incoming incarcerated youth that are coming into the Rogue Valley Youth Correctional Facility. And we just recently trained the staff of 15 at the New Bridges School, and which is actually part of the Three Rivers School District. And so there's ways in which that we're reaching in there. And then finally, I want you to know that we've trained 6 educators through restorative justice at Grants Pass High School. Schools are interested in restorative justice. We've been working in a lot of projects in different schools. They're interested in a partnership with us for 2019-20, and so we're going to work there at Grants Pass High School. We've been working with Rogue River since 2015-16, and I know Rogue River's not officially Josephine County.
Yeah, but it's close.
The families are, you know, it's just right there. And
we feel closer to them.
And I think they feel closer to Josephine County, in my experience. But I people are people. We've been working with the high school there for about 4 years, and next year we're gonna work with both the high school and the elementary school. And we like to work in a district if we can, in a school district from toe to tip, you know. Because if you can work with the little people and the elementary schools, and help them with disciplinary practices that are non-punitive, and that's essentially what restorative justice is. So it's a way of creating accountability that is non-punitive, and it's very powerful. And so if you can work with first the elementary school, and then, you know, begin to work with the middle school kids and then the high school kids, everybody kind of knows, oh, this is how we do things. And when things go wrong or I hurt somebody, I have to be held accountable, and this is the process, and this is what's going to happen, you know. And kids get accustomed to that. So
it's not about being soft on crime. It's about three legs of where there's an offender, there's a victim, and there's the community. And the whole crux of restorative justice is how you bring all three of those together to make it right. And with that, a lot of it's working with the offender side so they can build empathy and understanding about how their actions impacted it, as well as what the person who was harmed can be supported to really help them get the answers. And in a lot of the community cases, they're the only ones with it, and then the community as a whole. So in schools, it's a lot of the school is a community amongst itself. So we're teaching, and that's where the teachers have really grabbed onto it, because it's like, especially since they don't expel students anymore, it's like, how do we work with these youth and help teach them those skills and make it right, and that piece of them being responsible, and that's a big piece of it, is that they have to be able to take responsibility for the actions, but also through that learn that it doesn't define them, that they can make it right and repair it and go forward.
So you can see we're reaching into Josephine County and doing work here in a number of areas, and I'd like to know if you have any questions that you would like to hear from us.
I have used your service on a small claims court
case. Yes, you have.
I'm very satisfied with it.
Good. I'm glad.
Everybody wants... We agreed to that and sat in the room. The person that was coming after me decided, you know, maybe this isn't the right thing to do. After we got all the horse around.
Well, it's that what makes the mediation so powerful, especially on the public side as well, is that confidentiality piece.
Right.
That if, especially when it's used early on, that they could have to figure out what it is to make it to resolve the issue before it escalates, in that it's about figuring out what you can do today to get it done versus the blame. Well,
after the person that was coming after me stated their case for reasons for coming after me, what they heard them. When they heard themselves say it out of their own mouth, they go, what am I doing here?
Yes, isn't that interesting? You know, people get to...
One more opportunity to practice.
A moment of clarity.
And it was almost like, if you take what you just said into that courtroom, this isn't going to work out well. So we just resolved it in a way.
Yeah.
So just that other that one opportunity to, you know, like a mock, what are you going to say?
When we teach
to speak and be heard is a big deal.
When we teach mediation, it's the paraphrasing that the mediator does that's really the magic of it. It's because the person's not in conflict with the mediator.
Right.
So when I say it back, the other side hears what you may have said 100 times, as well as that other party hears themselves and kind of go, oh, because they're not in that conflict.
Well, it worked.
Yeah.
Good.
So the only point I would kind of point out again, a highlight, I know we've already gone over it, but the board has not made a selection one way or the other. The board has opted out.
Right.
I know we all comprehend that, but it's really the University of Oregon that's selecting. So this was not some sales pitch or anything. It's important for you to have information about what's going on in the community, and so we wanted to put that on the agenda.
Right. Absolutely. But, absolutely.
So just worth repeating.
It is. Because it is that odd one, because it's opt-in versus opt-out.
Yes means no.
I also want you to know that if any time that you have any concerns or questions or anything, I'm very available to any of you and I'll be responsive to you to make sure.
Well, if it comes to that we need a mediator.
That's right. Well, you'll know where to find that too. That's for sure.
And so looking at this, looks like 180? No,
that's how many people
355.
355, 185 of those 350 returned evaluations of the services.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So that's the...
That's the disparity there.
The disparity there.
And is that Jackson, Josephine, both?
No, that's just Josephine.
Just Josephine, okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, and that pie chart, you'll see that the majority of our caseload is with the circuit court and the small claims cases. But.
And that's before they get...
So they have filed their claim in that in mediation, orientation is mandatory. So the first thing they do is show up for orientation. And that, and then they go into a mediation process. If they don't get it resolved, they then go on to trial. It's scheduled out another longer time period, which is sometimes an incentive for folks, but it's that one of being much more expedient and getting their complaint or issue heard in a way that they're empowered to come up with a resolution versus turning it over to somebody else to apply the laws.
Well, it might be nice to have a business card or two around our office.
Yes, yeah. And we were...
In case.
We talked about it. Delta's been working real hard on getting us a new brochure, which we have out, we have printed, and we left that staff, but I'll bring them out on Friday.
Of course, it's right there ready to go.
Yeah, right there ready to go in the office. But the good news is I'll be up here on Friday for small claims, so I'll drop them off.
Great, that would be helpful.
As well as some cards.
We'll bring that up for you guys. Yeah, okay.
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 I don't have anything else, Dan?
I don't know.
Okay, thanks for coming in.
No, thank you.
Appreciate the work you guys do.
I'm glad to come and talk to you guys every 2 years at least. It's very good.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Take care. All right, back to our agenda. We have a Mining Advisory Committee update. We have the chair here, I believe, Mr. Dixon.
We're warming it up for you.
Sounds like his leg is asleep. Well, good morning.
Good morning. Afternoon.
So, I have some handouts, which is always cool. For the risk commissioner. I actually brought a copy for the attorney, can you believe that? And one for the commissioner's not here. And I'll give that to Wendy.
Thank you.
I suppose. There you go, Wendy. So. I think I gave you my copy. No, I have my copies in here. I'm trying to get organized. So to be brief, what precipitated the visit today, kind of, is another legislative action called the Natural Resources Management Act that the Congress just passed through the leadership of Lisa Murkowski, which is the chairman of the Natural Resource Committee at the federal level. And what they've done is withdrawn some very strategic and critical mining district here in Josephine County by this withdrawal. So it kind of puts us back on the hey, here we go again. Let me just kind of walk through this kind of in a fun way. I'm going to try to have fun today. Everybody laugh, haha. So I got this note on March the 14th from Diane Perry, which is the Minerals Administrator for the Bureau of Land Management. And I asked her a question. I said, could we get an update on all the mineral withdrawals on BLM land, and also call the U.S. Department of Agriculture Minerals Administrator Shoemaker. So, you know, the Mine Advisory Committee keeps bringing information to the Board of Commissioners. That's our job, I think. That's what I was told. So it looks like we got 700,000 acres underneath various agencies. That's 700,000 plus. More like almost 800,000. And it seems like we've got a long list of agencies that like to do things here within our county without talking to our county, because we didn't even know about this as a Mine Advisory Committee until after it had passed Congress and was headed for the President of the United States signature. So I don't think we're in the loop all that much.
Hmm.
Part of the point. So anyway, here's a letter that was written to Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Minority Leader Chuck Schumer about this bill. And it talks about how well done it was done and everyone that was advised. And it gives this long list of support, American Fly Fishing Association and all this. And I noticed reading through here, there wasn't one county there wasn't anybody from the mining side in the whole United States of America.
On that list.
On that list, period. It was all these other groups, and I like a lot of them. I like them.
Do we have a copy of that letter?
This one?
Yeah.
It's on the website. What I'm going to do
is... I want it on the website. Do I have a copy of that letter?
You can have that copy, thank sir.
You. All right. Thank you.
Seems like you're interested in it, so you can have it.
Well, I just wanted to look great, too. I'll give it to Darren right in the there.
So it just says, this is what Dan said, the Natural Resource Management Act that President Trump signed on the 12th of March. I asked her to give us a quick synopsis. She said the withdrawal is subject to validate existing rights. It means your mining claims remains active as long as you continually to timely file the paperwork associated with your mining claims. However, no new mining claims could be located in a withdrawal area. And some of the withdrawal areas, just the tributaries, you know, down around Galice and Braves Creek. And it seemed like we've been managing that land in our county for a long time, but now they're going to withdraw that by this congressional act of withdrawal without talking again to any of the local counties. They talked to a lot of agencies and they talked to a lot of entities, but it seems odd that they never talked to the people that actually pay the taxes in the counties where these actions have direct impact. And that's kind of what the Mining Advisory Committee is working on, is to suggest.
Now, did they get a hold of the mining claim owners down there?
No, sir.
Through this at all? Not at all?
Nobody knew it was happening until it was well down the road. Hmm. So here's another
and
copy.
And we're stuck with
on
notification
act.
Laws for
yes.
everything.
Basically. I think we've got that.
They didn't.
We've got this 47 in here. In the back.
Yeah. And the actual congressional act is over 600 pages long. I looked at the paragraph that applied to us and here in Josephine County, and basically it occurred to me, and let me just say this kind of offhandedly, because this is a progress report. This is not the end of the road, it's just a curve in the road. But we have been working as a county on tourism, mining, how can we capitalize on people wanting to go all over the United States to have a good time. We actually set aside some county land potentially to work with some local entrepreneurial groups that want to expand into tourism mining. We have a lot of those opportunities. But we're also discussing about, you know, the possibility of this Galice district being a cultural historic area that if they would have worked with us, we could have said, great, whatever you're doing, but, you know, that's the heartbeat of where our county got started, and we'd like to participate. So we're working on some ideas to, positive ideas to go back to them and said, look, we see what you're doing. You're trying to conserve the woods. You're trying to conserve the heritage. You're trying to conserve the fish and all that. We're interested also. We'd like to know how you're going to do that. Is there anything we could do to put a fish hatchery on Galice Creek or something? I mean, whatever they're doing, we're not in opposition with the federal government or the state government, but we're finding they don't talk to us. So how can we participate? And it's interesting who they do go and talk to. It's just no, 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 shut down, eliminate, take away, set aside. Now what we're finding in addition to that is that our woods are not being managed terribly well and they're burning up. Access is being taken away. And, you know, those kind of things. So what we have here with the county letterhead on it is just some ideas on how to move ahead. And one of the commenters here today that I met with a little group, and one of them said that, for instance, just here on this one Senate bill that we're talking about today, ONC timber issue is critical as the wild and scenic designation. When you put all this together, it eliminates also opportunities to harvest and manage timber in those areas. So by eliminating and withdrawing the minerals, they've also eliminated and withdrawn any kind of activities on these lands without input from us to kind of like, okay, well, that's a good idea, but what about how this and that? So we're just thinking there needs to be better coordination. And that's kind of my report. so I'm open to answer.
Do they allow you to work the claims that are already there?
Yeah, if you keep them, what they're saying in their verbiage is you have to validate the claim is a real claim. And there's interpretations of that. Some would say you've got to assay it and prove there's enough minerals on there to do that, and which is incredibly rare. Almost no one does that. But they say you have to validate the claim and keep it active. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing here on an annual basis, for instance, on our claims, if you had a claim here, you'd have to file with the county. You'd have to pay a fee for the filing. And you have to keep up your permits with various agencies in the state and pay them. But it's interesting to note that they come up with all these conflicting rules. So you buy all these permits and pay for all this, but they got rules where you can't actually do the work. That needs to be straightened out, I think. Now, how can you charge citizens fees for something if functionally the government's made it where you can't use it? That's not logical. I don't think.
Man.
And I'm reporting for the committee. We've all discussed this, so it's not my opinion. It's the committee's studied opinion. And our mine advisory committee is not a bad one right now. We've got two certified geologists. We've got two mine operators, the president of a mining district.
Probably the two mine operators.
A legal lawyer. And even our attorney, he comes in here sometimes. We like him. He looks over this stuff. He's learning. There's a lot to know about this mining law. And it gets convoluted in land use. For instance, patented mines is a legal title deed. But these government agencies are just acting like there's not. And that's a strict violation of the Constitution and land use. So we think that being the most mineral-rich county in the state, with the longest history in the state, maybe the only county in the country with a lady's name, we ought to push back a little bit, say, hey, boys. So that's our report. Any more questions?
No, and just frustrations. What can we do as a board to help make our voice heard, whether at the state or federal level?
Well, what we're doing right now is a series of meetings with some people that's in the Mine Advisory Committee and people that are historians of the area. And we're telling them we want a specific pathway. It's incremental, and not talk about all the law and all the atrocities of the government, but what should Josephine County do, and maybe other counties that have mineral wealth, say back to these agencies? It's like, we get where you're coming from to protect the environment, but we live here and we're interested and we'd like to participate. And if they do that, I think they're basically, what we're saying is the Mine Advisory Committee, they're illegally ignoring all local county government, because even in the footnote it says you will coordinate with the local, state and local governments. And we have a long history here in Josephine County of them ignoring coordination, and this is another classic example. They just did a major thing here in our county. We didn't know anything about it until it was signed by the president. And that's a smoking gun right there.
Well, but isn't that also a failure of our legislators that we send to them to not do a due diligence in their own district?
Well, the two legislators that were primary in this was Jeff Merkley and Ron White, and I don't think they really care much about Josephine County's. And I'm not being pointed, but their track record, because I go on the voting record and I mm-hmm. watch these people like anybody can, and they've consistently voted to either withdraw, to make monuments. They want to make the Rogue River a wild and scenic from the Crater Lake all the way to the ocean. So, they're not representing Jackson County, Lake County, or any of our interests down here. They're representing somebody else's agenda. Or, let me be kind, they're cherry-picking groups here in our area that have a strong agenda, and they're ignoring other groups completely. Mm-hmm. And I've been in these meetings.
That's well said.
I've been in these meetings. I sit right in some of these town hall meetings when Ron White and I had a few years ago, and I cornered his lady and I said, I noticed you talk to this group, environmental group, and this one, and this one, but when the mining people talk to you, you just really ignore us. And then you go and say, and Ron Wyden wrote a letter to Lisa Murkowski, and he said, our constituents in Oregon are 100% behind this. Well, his constituents are, but I don't vote for that guy. I'm just being kind of nice. Sean, don't write none of this down. Anyway.
It sounds like you guys are on a good path at the mining.
We're just looking for equal justice.
Should we put together a letter of support or something? Or in opposition to this withdrawal?
That was.
That
was in the works. And yeah, the board did decide to do that at one point. We were writing the thing by the time we came back next week.
It was already signed, sealed, and delivered, and we never got a shot at it. So can we do it in retrospect?
Send it to our reps.
Sure.
If not the whole committee.
Yeah, the letter focused, the board wanted me to work with Commissioner Morgan. That was who was the nexus on that. And so we did. We came up with a draft and a focus really on the non-binding ballot questions to the extent that the issue of whether constituents have opined or not. So we did recite, for example, when constituents were asked about 2 or 3 years ago, voters were asked about expanding the wild and scenic. Close to 2/3 came back with a negative response. And we had about 3 other non-binding ballot questions that were relevant to that particular proposal in Congress. So that's what the letter was going to focus on.
Well, and this seems like it has a nice, straight message. You know, we're not trying to argue this law or that law. We're saying that the normal process was ignored. That it's supposed to be representative government, and you guys are cherry-picking your sources. You can tell by this list on this letter. How they're cherry picking.
Well, that's the way I read the list, but I'm sure everybody that was on that list thought it was a great list.
Well, because they're included.
Yeah. But
included. So as long as they're included, the list is complete.
What a total breakdown. Well, it seemed like we don't have to get a 2-page message. This could be a 3-paragraph message.
If I may be so bold as to
give
my own. It's a different message.
Yeah.
Let me point out something on that list.
Process.
The question. There's not one forest agency. There's not even tourism's on it. There's a lot of people that aren't on that list.
They're missing.
Can you put together a list of people that aren't on that list that we can say these are folks that we would have liked to have heard from?
Sure.
And then just say, we think your list was incomplete because it did not include forest management. It did not include. And people come here, you go down to that mining country down there, and they go, it's beautiful. Down to Benton Mine, that's really pretty down there. Well, Whiskey Creek and all
one
that.
One of our local mining historians that I have a huge amount of respect for, he said, you know, it's interesting you're making a wilderness withdrawal on Calise Creek. And from where it hits the Rogue River all the way to the top is one big honking tailing pile. That's not wilderness. That's been and there's people mining in there right now. So how can they make a wilderness out of a mining district? You know, I would say, look, let's show it as a historical landmark. Work with the county and our tourism in Southern Oregon and say, look, we're not going to lock this away from the people. Just the opposite. We're going to put up some kiosks, show them what it is. Showcase it. But quit taking it away.
Yeah.
And let us manage it. And let us thin the woods out there if we need to. But just locking stuff away we saw the results last summer. I lived in smoke so thick around here, you know. Walk away. Well, that's not working. And I think because of the sensitivity of the natural resources on the West Coast, they may listen. It's a good time to talk. So you guys aren't letting us local folks that live here explain to you. Today I was talking to a guy that worked in the forest all last summer. And he said he worked with the federal agents that were out there. And they heard him talking that they won't let local people drop a bulldozer on a fire and put it out. It's against their policy. They don't care if it burns up our whole backyard. Well, I'm not sure that's good policy. That someone, and they're making money on fires. Let's just be open. Put this in the newspaper, Sean. They're making a lot of money federally in fighting fires, so they let them burn to get
Well, they're managing fires instead of managing the forest.
They're managing the resource. Yeah.
They're not preventing
it. Good way to put
that.
They're not preventing if they give us 10% of what they spent last year to prevent fires and another little bit to manage the forest, we wouldn't be losing
millions. Yeah, $40 million would go a long ways.
Yeah.
I met with a group yesterday, and it was a pretty good group of people who live out in the Murphy area.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to them that about, because they're concerned, their big concern was wildfire.
Exactly.
You get down this bowl and it's gone. And I said something about the lightning rods thing, and they said, gosh, that's kind of stupid, huh? And they go, huh, sounds really smart to me. When do we start?
But have you heard his lightning rod idea?
Yes, yeah, we've all kicked around.
Do a search on every mountain that gets hit all the time and put a lightning rod
out.
Clear all the tree out.
It won't fix everything.
Anyway,
thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis. If you can get us a list of the people that you think should have been on that list, we'll list them, I think.
I think so.
We need to find a follow-up letter. Just said, we realize this is after the genie's out of the bottle. However, we didn't even know you were looking at the bottle. And it was done before it even got started.
I've got the phone number of the head of Minerals Administration for the entire nation, for instance, and also the USDA Department of Agriculture. So out of the 700,000 acres, we got two phone numbers. We can call the head guy or gal and say, listen, you got all these agencies reporting to you. We're the most mineral-rich county in the state. And we're also one of the most timber-rich counties in the state. Wouldn't you want to just pick up the phone and call one of our county commissioners?
And both of them.
If you want to know what to do out here.
Both of them have been taken away from us, so we're told to rely on tourism, and we want to open up some mining for tourism, and we're not allowed to do that either. And we want to open up some stuff for tourism, and we're not allowed to get into the woods to show the people the big trees that we've been carrying around for so long as baggage.
Well, I'd like to say this too. Do you ever try to sell hotel rooms in a city so full of smoke you can't see across the street?
Yeah. Nobody wants to come here anymore.
Well, thank the mining committee as well, Dennis.
Well, they're doing a good job.
They're doing some good work.
You'll get us that list.
We will, sir. Thank
please,
you.
Please, and thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right, back to the agenda. Item 3 is limited power of attorney for land use and development permits for county property at 5077 New Hope Road.
Property is purchased on contract, so we're going through that process that we were talking about last week, I guess.
Not too long ago.
And so it's...
These aren't in the packet.
Sorry?
They're not in the packet.
Oh, okay.
So I just finished. Anyway, let's see.
Is that 5077 New Hope or 5077 New Hope?
What's one of them?
Yeah.
And then we also have Camp Joy. So there's two.
Okay.
Do we each get thank you.
And I have the applicant, if you want to know anything about what they're doing on the property.
Please.
One of them, the Camp Joy Road, she's just going to remove an old manufactured home, mobile home of some sort, and put a new one there.
That manufactured home is still there? I thought that was part of the cleanup to begin with, was that?
Yeah, there's a pad where it was or something. Anyway, she's putting a new one.
Okay, but it says you're going to remove the...
Just replacement.
Yeah, so replacement.
Remove's
sorry.
Not on there.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, so you're...
Yeah.
They want to put it right where the old one was.
Ish.
So the hookups would all be the same. Probably. The septic should be the same.
Yeah, yeah. Or the hookups
They don't need a permit for a septic or it have to be tested. I'm sure that all goes through planning and building safety.
On her development permit, it does say they have to obtain DEQ.
I'm actually going to do something with it. That's the lady that bought it from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good.
That's how the contract arrangement was supposed to play out. I mean, we want to sell it to people who are going to make productive use of these properties.
Is she all paid off? Is this all?
Oh, no.
Built
no, that's why they need to the county is still technically the owner.
Okay, all right. We okay?
Do you have two there for
she
sure?
She missed any payments? Is she current on her payments?
She's current on her payments.
So that's,
right.
That's how I think most of these are expected to go. The developer will finish the project and then sell.
Oh, is that
Daniels? Pay us off and
walk away with some.
No, that's a different deal.
I gave them both.
Okay.
They're not obligated to do that, though, are they?
They just got to pay
us. They just got to continue to make their payments.
They could borrow the money, I guess.
Both of them are current on... Do you have one of each there?
He does.
I have one of each. 5027 and a 3344.
I thought I did it.
Thank you.
Okay.
You have to sign two originals, that's why I'm asking.
Well, 334, that...
Is the typo okay?
Mm-hmm. I already asked, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I'm fine with it.
That Camp Joy Road thing's been going on almost 2 years, and if she's continuing to make her payments and everything's fine in 2 years, I have no problem.
Okay. And the other one...
And you want these signed today?
If you would.
Preferred.
That would keep the project moving.
Does the new rules governing manufactured housing have any bearing on this at all?
Probably need a motion.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, they had a deal on manufactured housing, and they were no longer considered to be motor vehicles.
Oh,
they were actually...
Definitional?
Titled pieces of property instead of having a motor vehicle VIN number.
This one will have a VIN number, because I've already heard from the folks downstairs who have to get a trip permit.
That was through Connie. They had a deal on
through
assessor the other day about that. So, okay, all right.
The other one, Daniels, is... the reason there's two names on that one, his agent, because, and maybe you already told him that.
I haven't.
Okay.
Please continue.
What he told me is that he is going to be selling it to this person.
To the Steve Mayotte?
Yes.
Now, does Steve Mayotte, what's his obligation to the county do? Does he take over payments?
No, he's going to...
pay it off.
Well, according to Daniel, he's saying, I've agreed to sell the property, and the buyer is this Steve Mayotte. But it's just timing. It's because as soon as Daniel pays it off, however they're working it out between the two of them, it'll be paid off. But in the meantime, they wanted to be able to get some permits and get going on the power and the septic and building permits and so forth.
And this would provide for that, right?
So yes, I put Daniel or his agent, Steve May.
Anything, okay. And I haven't read this because I probably wouldn't understand it if it did. if either one of these, Daniel or Steve, if they get halfway through this thing, we give them power of attorney. And they do a bunch of improvements on there to try to get their permits, or they clean this off, or whatever they got to get a permit for, whatever they need the power of attorney for. And the whole thing goes south for the winter. Yeah. All those improvements that they did stay with the property. If we have to foreclose, it becomes ours.
There's no foreclosure. It's just contract termination. We've done it before.
Right. So they didn't hold up the terms of the contract, so therefore we get it back?
Yes.
Yeah.
According to the contract.
And hopefully it's better and not worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Steve was in our office, and the concern, I mean, what he was wanting to work was he didn't want to have to tie up a huge bunch of capital at this particular stage of the project by buying the property, and so this is a way.
Well, and this is what we custom designed it for anyway. That's why we did it.
He sent this yesterday saying they are going to go ahead with the purchase, but it's not going to be like immediate.
Okay.
And that was why.
So anyway, it's playing out the way that I think the board had wanted these contracts to play out in this case.
Yeah, I think that's okay. We started this thing a couple years ago when we have land sale,
mm-hmm.
we sell some property that you could make payments on it because mm-hmm. we had people saying, you know, gee, I would have liked to buy that, but it just got bid too high or whatever. And
right.
So we made a pretty comfortable form to get in and carry the paper, and it's been a very, so we haven't.
Yeah, anything returned yet? Yeah, I was gonna say if you haven't lost one yet, that's a good sign.
Sure, we have. Yeah, it's been real. We can get into the particulars of that. Yes,
you have lost a few.
It's not 100%.
Not 100%, but it's pretty good program.
Pretty good, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, we're working out.
We have about 9, I think, under contract right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, we have a hit or miss experience, but I think we're going to get to where we can make it pretty reliable.
So, do we need to make a separate motion for each one of these? Is that clear?
Yes, please.
So I'd entertain a motion for item 4, item 3, 5077 New Hope Road.
It's 5027, right?
27.
Yeah, 27.
Oh, it's right on here.
It's right on the here. Document. It's not right on the...
Oh, that's, okay. That's clean.
I'll make that motion, Jeremy.
All right, and I'll second that.
Commissioner Dion.
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler.
Yes. Okay, so New Hope Road, Is that what I said?
That was New Hope there.
Yeah, that was New Hope Road. So that one passes. Item 4 is for 33344 Camp Joy Road. I'd entertain a motion.
Make a motion to grant power of attorney to Sarah Moyer on 33344 Camp Joy Road, Grants Pass, Oregon.
Very good, and I would second that. Would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Dion?
Yes.
Commissioner Ballard?
Yes. Okay. So two of them in a row.
All right.
Passing. Good luck. Sell those properties. Turn them around.
Sure.
So yeah. I sign this one. If you want to just sign your spot, and I'll spot
you. Don't have to fall over.
Item 5 is HB 2675. Health insurance double coverage.
And this was, under normal circumstances, going to be JJ's presentation. Couldn't be here today, so I'm pinch hitting for him. He did provide a letter to at least me.
We saw
the letter. Okay, so that basically tells the whole story. Legislature is, by all indications, moving forward with the bill. I just checked this morning, and it's set for a work session, which means it'll meet last Friday's deadline. Work session is at 3 p.m. today. As a matter of fact, so we'll know more, you know, later today in terms of whether it moved. If I was reading all the materials online correctly, it has not been assigned a fiscal impact, which means it's going to go to the Rules Committee in the House, which means it's going to be pending there until who knows when.
Right.
But if the board, I guess that was all to say, if the board wants to weigh in on this point, then you still have an opportunity. And it's JJ's recommendation that the board do so. The county, through the board's office, conducted a survey of affected employees. Numbers came back, 27 county employees would be directly affected by this proposed legislation. And JJ characterized
in a bad way?
Favorably.
Right? Well, in a favorable
Favorably,
way.
Favorably. Right? Yeah. If the legislation passes, that's pending, then these 27. And I'm one of them, by the way. My wife works for a state agency, and so I want that full disclosure out here that
that I would be,
and Pat is one of them too, because of course she has a spouse working for the county, so so maybe I'll just leave it at that, and
so that's all.
And that's all. Yeah,
well, yeah, I don't see any reason not to support that. Dan, you have any input?
No, I really don't. I you know, this insurance thing is just, I'm wondering if it, because I have full coverage on two different fronts, but it's not recognized by the county, and I think it is now. What we made a change back in. See, because I don't collect benefits from the county for any health care at all.
Okay.
But yet, if you sit down and look at it, it becomes, somebody's getting $965 worth of coverage, and because I already have it, I don't even get the $965. I don't get any part of it. And where it would be, and they've made it, I think, half. I get $500 or something a month for, because I have coverage elsewhere. It's for people designed, like, say, for instance, if your wife worked for the school district, I think, you know, and then you work here, and you both have full coverage for medical, why are you doing that?
Right.
You know, it should be one or the other, and you don't get, like I say, you don't get double coverage.
No.
Right. It's husband and spouse, and it's wife and spouse, and...
Yeah, and it was exactly that rationale that the legislature was apparently trying to address last go-round, saying we can save money, but then the insurance companies responded by not passing along.
By saying, why would they?
Yeah.
I'd just keep right with it, boy.
So I wound up not penciling out from the state's perspective.
Well, I'm glad somebody caught it. It sounds to me like it's an error there somewhere, but...
JJ is pretty highly involved in all this as well.
Okay.
Well, and he was one of the 27, I should tell you. I don't think he'd mind me telling you that. He'd probably prefer if I do, that responded that he may be affected. But he sits on a committee that is dealing directly with this issue. And he, of course, sits on the Oregon Education Benefits Board. He's pretty heavily involved in all this.
Okay.
And he strongly advocates that the county weigh in to the legislative process here. So.
Sure.
All right, I can work with him and get a letter generated.
I
we'll bring
I
it back.
Think
and,
so.
Okay.
I think that's all you're asking for right now is a letter of support on.
Yeah.
You want us to start on something. I mean, we're going to bring it back to the board for review and theoretical approval.
Okay, yeah, I'd say you got that far.
Sounds good.
Okay.
So
so we'll make that.
Keep that moving.
All right, item six is a grant agreement with Oregon Business Development Department for fire suppression water pond rehabilitation at the Illinois Valley Airport. Sir, Larry.
Larry show begins. No, he's got some pretty good stuff.
This is favorite. This is Larry's favorite subject. Larry, come on, talk about your favorite subject.
Well, it's a long-lived subject, that's for sure.
I have to agree with that.
Yeah. You guys bring copies of that contract with you? Okay. I happen
yes,
to have one, but
we do.
Oh yeah. Okay. Good. So.
Well, good. Me too.
That's the 13 pager. Yes.
Yeah, we've got. Okay. Good. Good. In a nutshell, this was a grant that we pursued through Oregon Business Development, and it's a regional infrastructure finance
Regional Solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, regional Solutions team. Marta Taranci and Alex Campbell and those guys. and it was approved through the RV Act here locally and then at the state level last year. But the contracts were not issued for the grant themselves until the legislature appeared as though it was going to approve the sale of the bonds to fund the grant program. So that's happened, and so the contract is in our hands. Had a chance to review it, made a few changes, addresses and things like that, nothing of substance. And so
are these state bonds?
Yes, they are.
So what's our bond rating for the state? Do we have people that want to invest in the state of Oregon bond?
I think you have to pay them to buy them now.
That's what I'm learning.
Like 0.6 or 0.8. It's getting down
scale.
There, yeah.
Yeah, we are. It's got to be on that scale.
Yeah, it was 0.8 last year, and I heard it's still dipping.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's get our bonds.
I mean, it's okay to agree. Yeah, no kidding. It's okay to agree to sell the bonds. Yeah, we're going to sell the bonds, and we're going to fund all this stuff. But what if the bonds don't sell?
Apparently, they still do.
Because there's no.
And a lot of us
return.
Municipalities buy them too.
Well, yes,
to they invest their own money.
Oh, yes,
the risk-free. Yeah.
Huh?
People are afraid of inflation. They buy the bonds even if they have a negative return because they don't want to lose their money at a greater inflation.
Well, I wouldn't want to pay income tax on profit. That's for sure. My golly, I'll just get by something that's going to lose.
Just
buy the bonds.
Like
you won't have to. Yeah.
Exactly. I think these are exactly right.
So let it lose money.
Profit margin.
Yeah, but your accountant and say, yeah, I said, you lose any money last year? Yeah, invest in the state of Oregon.
I don't know that we could fix that problem, though.
And so what is...
The wildfires we're at least addressing today.
So. Well, in just nutshell, what are they going to do, and when's it going to be done?
We are going to complete the water pond. It was never finished.
But it's roughed in.
It was roughed in. It actually had a liner put in it, but they never installed the pumps or the controls or connected the electricity. It filled up with water every winter, drained out and evaporated in the summer, and the sun just beat the liner to death, and it was disintegrated within about 3 years. It's my understanding. It was nearly complete.
I've been out and looked at it. Yeah. We should have. Well, we went around there.
They pulled the old liner. It's just dirt now, right?
Yeah. It blew away.
Yeah, disappeared.
In little chunks about this big.
Kind of like the roof on the marina. It
so
was about the same thing.
Yeah. Our engineering firm estimates it'll be 350 to 400,000 to complete the job.
And so it'll be a real deal. Have a pump, float,
it'll
so
be
work all by itself.
I mean, we'll be able to go out there and connect a fire engine to the fire hydrant and spray water.
And away we go.
Yeah.
Can they dip out of it? Helicopters?
Yeah, helicopters would be able to dip out of it, although we'd be paying close attention to make sure they don't tear the liner with their...
Yeah.
I think with the river close enough, the river's not that far away, I would say dip out of the river. I don't think
that'd be a last resort.
That's probably what they do.
Plus, in the summertime, we're going to put a cover over it to control evaporation.
Well, it'll have a cover over it all the time. So,
that'll
preclude dipping.
When they're
dropping on a fire that's in the wilderness area, they actually have to pull water out of the irrigation ditch that comes from the wilderness area that has chlorine bleach poured into it to kill any possible organisms because the helicopters are going to take that water and dump it on the wilderness and they can't introduce foreign bacteria and mold spores and things like that.
Oh, golly.
Not kidding. The fire burns on and on and on and on and on because we don't want to.
Right, so we manage the fire now.
We're managing the fire, not the timber.
We'll be able to put out any fire that is in the industrial complex, however, very quickly.
So when might it be completed?
Well, it's
by contract has to be completed within 24 months of the issue of this grant, but our plan is to have it done by the end of this year, calendar year. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that, does that cross over into any storm drains or infrastructure, power?
You know, it has a really interesting and beneficial crossover with the irrigation canal, because our plan is to obtain a partial water right. We do a temporary partial water right from Spare Time Supply, who took over the water right from Rough and Ready. Okay?
Okay.
And get a tenth of their water right, and then channel the water from the uphill portion of the irrigation canal into this water pond. And then as the pond is full, it runs out back into the canal.
As a, it's a retainer.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a retainer. It starts up here, fills the pond
version
to a spillway site, and then that goes down and goes right back into the ditch. So once you fill the pond, your and the associated
nice
infrastructure
right
in the industrial
back
part.
The source.
Plus, we don't have to drill any additional wells. We don't have to pump water out of the ground to fill the pond. The water's already there, and it's in a ditch that's running up like less than 100 yards from the pond site.
Yeah,
that's
we've been hammering away at that thing. And my only big concern, my reservation about doing this thing, we were going to fill it out of those wells. Well, there's two wells, and they were like 4.5 gallons a minute. Yeah, and run those pumps trying to keep the evaporation rate and everything off of that pond, you'd be running those pumps. You can't afford the electric bill.
Well, if we didn't have a cover, and it's a floating plastic cover, basically, if we didn't cover the pond, the evaporation rate would exceed the capacity of the wells.
And if they ran 24/7. And really, if we're not, and you get right down to it, you tell a farmer, a grower, say, for instance, a marijuana grower, you're telling them out there they can't draw water out of the aquifer because you'll suck the aquifer dry, and yet we're going to do that with a pond, with a fire retention pond. So I think I'm glad we got away from that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a good thing to do.
The long pole in that tent is obtaining that partial water right.
Yeah.
Spare Time Supply is very supportive of the community. They're cooperating. They're rah-rah. They want to give us a tenth of that water right. And they've referred the matter to their water rights attorneys in Portland.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure that's a good thing or not, but I think it is, and that should facilitate.
Depends on the message that went with it.
I'm going to ask a question here because I don't really know, but
sure.
Could, like for instance, I know one of the things that Chief Hoke had a concern about was the actual amount of gallonage there, and we've answered that, but he's always been... Say, for instance, we get somebody wants to put in the industrial park, wants to put a airplane engine rebuilding place. Mm-hmm. And if they wanted to put a cistern just to have 10,000 gallons of extra water or 5,000, one of the big plastic tanks is, could we tell them, you can fill that out of that pond?
I believe that the application for the temporary water right will
allow that
maintenance ponds. These are called maintenance ponds.
Right.
Maintenance reservoirs. Okay, that for fire suppression or whatever, and we can fill as many of those as we want because the cistern water will be protected from evaporation. It doesn't net take away any water from the guys that have the water rights downstream.
No, because our water right would
until there's a fire,
cover that.
And we pump the water out.
And then it's replenished anyway. You're not we theoretically are only using that water for standby water. We're not using it. We're not using that water other than the initial filling of the pond and any cisterns we have.
Well, the term of art there among the certified water rights experts, they call that a maintenance reservoir.
Okay.
And the water flows in and it flows out.
Because I think
nobody ever uses it unless there's
an emergency. You're not watering grass out of it or something.
No. I think if we could we may be able to even encourage people to put in a cistern on each one of those, maybe.
And I don't know why, but I know all this because I'm an airport manager.
That might be an option that somebody's going to build a thing out there. If they fall under certain criteria, they could put on a cistern.
We would
fill that cistern.
But here's the thing, and Dennis is, as you know, very outspoken and a strong voice, and he was initially very much opposed to this approach.
Mm-hmm.
But he was operating under misapprehension. I mean, he thought that the pond had been completed and then failed because it was a bad design. And the point being, it was never finished. It was never completed and never had a chance. So that information, plus we went back at his and the insistence of the whole board out there, we went back and spent another $10,000 on engineering studies to show exactly what the cost per gallon of an underground concrete cistern, an underground fiberglass cistern, an above ground steel cistern, an above ground plastics, you know, and all this stuff, and what the capacities are. We looked at it like 8 different ways. And this is, I mean, they had the right idea 20 years ago. This is the least expensive, most cost effective way to store water. And the only thing they didn't do, and we don't know if they would have or not, is put a cover over it when it was finished, because it was never finished. And the cover will provide UV protection for the liner, which is the important part.
Well, I've kind of been there for the last year and a half on this thing, and I'm happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah.
And so you'll keep water in it all winter as well to keep the liner healthy?
Sure. I mean, yeah, we don't have an issue with freezing necessarily, so, you know, especially with the cover over the top.
And then is the cover replaceable?
Yes. And I mean, it will have to be replaced.
Is that every 5 years?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
And I think the cover is going to help out with UV rays, because a lot of times you run sunlight through water, you'll cook roofing, can do everything because of the reflection. You magnify the rays of the sun, but that cover will stop a lot of that. That should hold a lot of that deterioration.
Sounds really good. Another success story.
Thank you for your patience on that.
Man, I'll tell you.
Sat through meetings.
My beard was black when I started that.
If I could, I'd be in my truck heading back to Grants Pass any minute now.
So I'd entertain a motion to approve the grant agreement.
I will so move that gladly.
And I will second that. And I don't think you have to call a roll in here. Am I making a... Doesn't matter, mistake?
Yeah, all in favor. Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
And when I say aye. So we got Wendy out of the loop on that one. And that does pass, so the grant agreement is approved.
It is.
Cool. And we'll do two copies so that you have a Wettig original for the logbooks, and we send another Wettig original back to the state.
So. Wow. Oh. 13 pages down from the top is the
Wettig
first
Wettig.
Original. Wettig, yeah.
That's Lily. She's the one that officiates the Wettig, not me.
Oh, I'm close now. 13, go back to 12.
Oh, I might have been wrong on my page count.
Well, no. The signature page is
the signature. There's only one.
Not there, I don't think.
It's on 11 and 13. Too. Come on.
I've got a second one here. I have to get another one.
I found
it. There it is.
It was easy on the third try.
They stick together.
Here's the one in the middle.
Okay.
And there's one towards the back. Okay. Well.
And you said there's one in the middle?
No, that was the one in the middle. There's one way in the back. Second page back from there, third page from the back.
Paperwork management gets complicated.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right. Additional subjects or matters from commissioners? Anything else we should talk about, Dan?
No.
We get another shot at it.
Well,
after executive session. Okay, I don't have anything either. Today is Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019 at 2 p.m. The commissioners announced 3:04. The commissioners will now meet in executive session for the following agenda items. Approved representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the audience are asked to leave the room. Approved representatives of the news media are specifically directed not to report on or otherwise disclose any of these deliberations or anything said about these subjects during the executive session, except to state the general subject of the session, as was previously announced. No decision may be made in executive session. At the end of the executive session, we'll return to open session and welcome the audience back into the room. The subjects will be lease of county property at the Ivy Airport, ORS 192.6602E. Item B is Josephine County versus Darren Quinton,
ORS 192-6602H. And C, State of Oregon PUC versus Josephine County and Pacific Corp. 18 CV 54501 ORS 192.6602H. And so the recorder will be turned off at 3:05.
Happy to
say. Well, it's 3:59 and we're out of executive session. Item 8A, we're going to have some future negotiations. Item 8B, we're going to commence with legal action. And item 8C, we're going to continue discussions with parties in the case. With that, I'd move on to item 9, legal or any additional subjects or matters for commissioners.
Not today. I had a couple of real good meetings with some folks out there in the Spencer Creek area, but I have a meeting tomorrow with the, she's Elizabeth, which is the, with BLM, local, she's regional. Something with BLM, and I'll bring that up with her at the time. There's some issues out there with fire danger and things and nefarious stuff that's going on. Where it's going to be a number of different things, departments and boards in on that thing. But I just want to start with BLM and see what their feeling is. It's primarily BLM land out off of Spencer Creek. And I'm going to try to petition to get a gate put up in there too. I have to check with our foresters, see if we're protecting any of our lands, because if we happen to be one of the jurisdictions up there, maybe a letter of support for a gate would probably help out from this board. But I'll let you know if that's true.
Okay. I went out to Lake Selmac on Saturday for a cleanup day. And the horse association from out there sent like 9 or 10 people from their group to help do trail maintenance. And then there's some like professional trail maintenance people that have been doing it for 40 years, volunteering and for money. And they were out there volunteering. And I thought, well, how tough is it to clean up a trail? But I guess it's been four or five years.
Yeah.
And we had a snow, pretty heavy snow this winter at one point. And so there was 12, 16 inch logs across there. They were ripping chainsaws. We were hauling sawdust and removing smaller stuff as well, but nice trail system out there. And good to be in the park because there was a lot of people putting boats in, bringing their kids out, having picnics. There was a birthday party. It was great.
I don't know. What are they going to do about there? Is it that grass that moved in out there?
The milfoil, it's called. They have some volunteers that are trying to take the worst of it out each year, but there is no present plan to make it go all the way away. So I think aside from draining the lake, you can't get rid of that stuff. And so maybe they'll have a magic bullet eventually. I wonder why like Oregon State University or somebody couldn't come up with a study part of their outreach program.
Bring them out there, put them to work, their extension.
Uh-huh. Yeah, their extension service, exactly. Yeah,
they're big into water.
And I asked, because it's a man-made lake, is it just a reservoir and we can kind of do whatever we want without asking EPA and everybody, and Sarah's
all water is owned by the state of Oregon.
That's a lake now, even though you made it.
All water is owned by the state of Oregon. You're not
so even the mill ponds.
Everything doesn't matter. That's a big squawk over there in the rural counties over Malheur and Harney and stuff. Yep. They've got these drainages that come down through those, and they want to just block it off, retain the winter runoff, and then use it to water in the winter in the summertime. Absolutely not.
God,
that water has got to go down and be out of there by springtime because we don't want you to use it. It doesn't make any sense, but it's the state of Oregon owns all water.
So. Well, at least somebody's smart enough to tell us all what to do.
Yes,
that's nice.
Yes, you're right. Thank you. Okay.
Well, and with that, our meeting is complete at 4:03.